Now, this budget business at the same time is coming when the government's economic strategy, to be quite frank, is quite confusing. They say, oh, we need to save money, save money, save money. Now, economic theory, in theory, says that on the odd occasion, you want to stimulate the economy, you want to put more money into the economy, and the government steps in when business is no longer able to or willing to. I mean, geez, overnight we're seeing what's going on at Air New Zealand. That's coming home to roost. Well, joining us now to kind of break down all these things, our favourite economist, he's the economist with the mostest, that's not even a thing, Matt Ross Kruge joins us on the line. Welcome, Matt.
Yeah, kia ora, Matt. Man, that was a nice summary of the budget too. Well done.
Yeah, it's confusing. I mean, I know they've made some announcements. I mean, the you know, Winston's happily gone, according to Marama Davidson, who we've just been talking to, who's pimping stuff out. We already know that fees free is gone, and yet the irony is, at the opposite end of that, we're seeing more overseas international students paying between 30 to 50 grand for a master's or a PhD per annum. But it seems really confusing because, Matt, Is it true that one of the economic theories out there is that when the economy begins to falter, sort of thing, that government, when nobody else is able to or wants to, steps in to stimulate? Isn't that the way it goes?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a strong branch of economics, and you can see Trump doing it in the US with a lot of that wartime spending. When things get tough, when countries are struggling, they can go to government borrowing or government spending. That money goes into businesses' pockets, and they then spend it on cafes or restaurants or replacing their cars or whatever it is, and it works its way through, and it kind of gives the economy a sugar hit. And so, yeah, it's a really well-known way.
Now, just to be clear, we're not talking sugar tax. We're talking sugar.
No, not yet.
I mean, I remember, Matt, back in the old days of the Howard government in Australia, one of these stimulation packages, I can't believe we're talking stimulation this early in the morning, one of those stimulation... yeah, I know, right? One of those stimulation packages was flagpoles at schools or in communities where everyone got $5,000 to put up a flagpole, providing the local member of parliament was able to open the flagpole. But $5,000, and there was maintenance on school halls and community halls and all that other sort of stuff, driving maybe $20,000 into the local economy. $20,000 to $25,000 in local communities is a lot of money, but that's a sort of at the smaller scale of the budget, I guess, stimulus. But in this case, we're not even seeing investment in hospitals or schools or even infrastructure. We're seeing, you know, potholes sort of being fixed. We're seeing a response to natural disasters. But unless I'm wrong, Matt, I can't see any stimulation.
I mean, not yet. We're still a little way away from budget. They'll have a little bit of powder up their sleeve. What I'm guessing is that we're going to see a whole lot of little things, well, not little things, important things, but things that don't necessarily capture the headlines cut. And we're going to see that money redirected to maybe a couple of roads of national significance, or I think there are going to be some infrastructure announcements, but they're not going to be new spending. It's not going to be a new money coming into the region so much as something that looks nice for an election year. But I think to pay for that, they're going to cut a lot of small stuff.
Well, I mean, the other thing too is that the opposite end, of course, we saw some figures from Stats New Zealand released yesterday indicating now more people are leaving the country than are coming necessarily in. So I think that gap between net migration and outward flow is on the up. We're seeing Air New Zealand potentially bracing us all for massive losses. We're seeing daily, I think, in the papers, the number of hospitality joints going under, yet we're told that tourism has never looked better. And we're still yet to see, really, I guess, the flow through of whatever the hell is going on in the Middle East. I mean, my God, that seems to be, we've gone from obliteration to proliferation of propaganda. We don't even know which way is up with this sort of thing. I mean, do you think there's just too many unknowns now for us to fix on what the actual state of the economy truly is in maybe a year's time? I mean, because what's happened today may not actually filter through, until maybe another 12 months?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you're crystal ball gazing at best.
Yeah.
Trying to, I guess, at
looking
the moment,
for those lotto numbers. Like. I'm looking for those lotto numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you can find them, you'll be a millionaire. But no, I mean, we can make our guesses, and a lot of it's beyond our control anyway. It depends on countries and decisions that really nobody cares what we think down here. And sometimes that's the place to be. But we do have some control over what the government spends, how it allocates its funding, how it tries to keep the regions or different parts of New Zealand ticking along. The regions actually aren't doing too bad with the high dairy payout. I mean,
well, of course,
hurting,
that's a couple of billion bucks into the regions or into the provinces. I think on average, the individual dairy farmer was getting about 400K, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're in a dairy farming region, you've probably got a little bit of money coming into the economy there. But the cities are. I mean, Wellington is a shadow of itself when you go down there now. It's actually almost scary going through and looking at the closed up businesses, and people just aren't out spending and enjoying like they were. Auckland still has a pretty good feel about it.
But Christchurch seems to be going gangbusters.
Oh, doesn't it? But that's taking away from Dunedin quite a bit as well there. But yeah, no, Christchurch is a real, now that is a good example of an economic stimulus. Real tragedy what happens with the earthquake, not trying to take away from that at all, but you then get a whole lot of money and a whole lot of people come in to fix that up. That's a sugar hit, and you end up with a city that's quite vibrant because it's had that renewal and it's had that investment. So Christchurch is a really good example of an economic stimulus story.
Well, I mean, the new Te Kaha Stadium, I was watching some of the commentary from small businesses around the stadium, and what they were saying was, we've waited and waited and waited, we've mortgaged our homes, we've got ourselves into debt just to survive waiting for the opening of the stadium, and now that the stadium's open, it seems as if all of their hopes have, talk about crystal ball gazing, all their hopes have actually come true, because the stadium's just absolutely packed out, and they've got a forward flow of events going on, whether it be sports, whether it be entertainment. And then you look to Auckland, as you say, and it seems we're in this perennial fight in Auckland about noise control around Eden Park or this or that. It doesn't seem as if there's any plan to build any really good big stuff. I mean, you know, we're still bogged down decades later in the Second Harbour Bridge crossing. Do you or don't you strap some, you know, new things? We're waiting for the CRL project to come to fruition. Will we or will we not build a new stadium down at the port site? I mean, it seems as if it's stagnating.
Yeah, and the stimulus you do get, I mean, the new road construction or City Rail Link, they actually have just caused huge disruption for a long period. And they're not, in some ways, they're addressing problems that exist. They're not fixing problem, you know, they're not planning for the future. They're just trying to recover from the traffic problems and the people movement problems that we have today. So now there's definitely, I mean, whether Christchurch has taken some of the attention away from Auckland, I mean, Auckland has incredibly, as you know well, incredibly complicated political environment, and it seems almost impossible. I mean, you only have to drive through some suburbs and you see how lightly built up they are, and the NIMBYism and the
unwillingness not in my backyard. And yet, ironically enough, where I live, the old quarter acre block with one home has now been turned over, and every one of my neighbours, a property developer, looking at building not a granny flat out the back, but a three-storey monstrosity.
Hey, yeah, 3x3.
3x3, I mean, you've got, you know, the whole thing has just gone crazy. It seems that there's no plan, because the other problem is of course, infrastructure. We're in this perennial fight in places like Auckland and Wellington about the fact that, you know, the water pipes aren't working. I mean, sorry, I'm going to just change tack for a minute. I thought it was remarkable, Matt, that I'm reading in the paper overnight that Australia and New Zealand were having a water quality sort of who's got the best water competition, I think somewhere here in New Zealand, and blame me dear, the Australians won. But I guess it sounds like we're putting all this stuff on the back burner. And yet, economically, if we invest in that sort of infrastructure, that oven by itself would be stimulus, right?
it would be stimulus, and it's also a lot cheaper to keep on top of things than it is to suddenly have to fix everything all at once. And water is the perfect example of that. But electricity, basically all our infrastructure has been, we keep putting off reinvesting in it. Mm. We don't really grow it for the growing population. We put too much pressure on it, and then we wonder why it breaks. And then we suddenly wonder where we're going to find the money to fix it.
Well, I must admit, I think most of our listeners are a bit dirty like me and filthy on those Aussies for apparently having cleaner water than we do. Hey, I'm in awe at this thing. I'm in awe. I mean, you know, we have these scraps over bottled water and all the rest of it, and then in come the Aussies. They swoop in here like seagulls looking for a hot chip. Next minute, they've taken our police, they've taken our teachers, our nurses, our doctors, and now the hooers have taken our water. No, there's no dignity in that. Hey, coming back to the budget, because otherwise I'll get off track, and next minute we'll go back to the lotto numbers. It seems to me, though, if you're a Māori community organisation or entity, then the chances are you're not going to see much in this budget for the Māori side of things, right?
Yeah, I can remember pushing Labor quite hard, thinking, oh, look, there's just not enough for Māori in this budget. Now, I'm hopeful for anything. Mm. There's been, as far as I can tell, no announcements. Māori haven't been visible at all in pre-budget announcements or discussions. I think last year we were excited because there was about $5 million for an airport up north.
And
that was the big spend for Māori. It's really grim, and I won't be taking. It makes me wish for the days where I was complaining.
It's like you've got to pull the begging bowl out. You know, it's literally like I know what I need to do today. I'm going to gaze at my crystal ball for a little bit longer in the vain hope that I'm going to get the Powerball numbers. But at the same time, just in case, here's my begging bowl.
Yeah, and you feel like everybody's trying to hide that something's for Māori to get it past the coalition. So, you know, even when they are trying to, when they are trying to put money into Māori education or health, they try and call it something else and hide it so that, because they're busy trying to protect the optics between the coalition government, which is terrible, really, but it's, I suppose it's where we are.
Well, see, the other one that confuses me, well, and not that I'm easily confused, but the building of state houses, I mean, I would have also thought that would be a crackerjack sort of stimulus. You go and build a whole lot of state houses because you've got an ongoing issue with housing. And yet we're told that they're investing in social housing. But then when you think about it, well, hang on, investing in social housing means that we don't own the asset as the taxpayer. We're paying for it. We don't own the asset. Therefore, it doesn't sit on our books. We don't own anything, so we're not really taking advantage. And by the way, we then pay the social housing provider under the guise of a charity or what have you to actually rent the place. I don't know. Maybe I'm just old school. Maybe I'm just dumb.
Well, you've got to think of ways to make profit out of all of this, right?
Yeah,
when it's social housing, there's a margin involved.
Yeah, profit from poverty.
Yeah, you certainly get that sense of it. That the whole idea, I mean, the philosophy is the state. If there's a way to make it into a business, the state gets out of the way and makes it into a business, and passes it over to the private sector. That's the clear philosophy, and you see that coming through in things like state and social housing. And I was going to say before, the other thing that I've been really and getting really nervous about is one thing that Māori have been really resilient, and we've the media sector, consultancy, there's lots of things that we were building up our own identity and our economy around, and those areas seem to be really getting slammed. And I think in the budget this year, you'll see areas where, the things like Māori media, things like our consultancies, our Māori research groups, people looking at health and education support, I think you're going to see lots of cuts in those areas.
You know, the one area, it's interesting you should say this, because our next guest In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Awatea Mita about what's going on with prisons, because it seems as if one of the biggest steers that you could possibly attach to Māori is let's just build more prisons. I mean, I think we're spending about $1 billion on building or refurbishing prisons to house more people. That happens to be more Māori. I think the Māori population, yep, or the population of Māori within the prison system is more than 50%. So it seems as if we're doing this economics on poverty and investing in areas where instead of getting people out of that cycle of poverty, or you know, investing in recidivism and this sort of stuff, all we're really doing is keeping people locked up, put down, and we're not really doing much at all.
Yeah, and the things that get people out of getting into those problems, so the hope from education or training or getting them a good job, those things are disappearing. Unemployment rates more than double for Māori than it is the non-Māori. We're getting fees-free education cut. We're getting all of these good jobs for Māori becoming scarcer and scarcer. Our young people aren't seeing themselves in the economy. It's really, and those are the sorts of push factors that people end up in situations where they end up being incarcerated. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I mean, when you don't have much hope, you cling to whatever it is that you can get a bit of money out of, or a bit of lifestyle out of.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I mean, you know, Māori, particularly young Māori, are fantastic entrepreneurs. I still think we're part of the world's greatest storytellers, but here we have a case where, you know, we're not really taking advantage of that. And yet the Māori Queen, I just posted a photo on our network this morning about her meeting with King Charles. Yesterday she was in with Prince William. She's going around the world selling the message of Māori entrepreneurship and the Māori economy.
Yeah.
And yet here at home, what we're seeing is actually just cuts, 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 and more cuts. Hey, Matt, we've got the budget coming up. We're hoping to get you into the lockup. So if you're a treasurer and you're listening, make sure you get those credentials through. And if you don't, you can hear from me on our Facebook page. Hey, Matt, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's always great having you. I know we went a little bit longer than I thought we would, but that's because I was stimulated.
Oh, it's been fantastic. Although I'm standing outside talking to you to not wake the kids up, so I'm freezing my little toes off.
Well, go inside. It's
all the pain for you guys.
Go inside, crystal ball gaze. We won't send you a mug because we've had budget cuts for your cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And if you get those lotto numbers in the Powerball, you just ring CJ. We'll cut you into the action.
I'll let you know. I think it's about the last hope left.
Awesome. That's Matt Ross Kruge, of course, our resident economist, our resident analyst when it comes to all things the economy.